That was Bill giving me the high side to start. Do it again, Bill. Yeah, nice.
Yeah, there we go.
I'm telling Carl.
Yeah, tell Carl.
Tell Carl. Bill hit the microphone. Welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. Guess we can get started now. My name's Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
The microphone hitter.
Master of the microphone.
Do tell, Bill. Do we have a sponsor this hour?
You know, this hour, we do have a sponsor. It's Pape Machinery, the local John Deere, Ag and Turf, Honda, and soon-to-be steel dealer here in the Reading area. That's right. And they are located at 3119
Quinn
View Boulevard.
Like that new music I added?
That's my
jingle.
Yep. That's real good, Aaron. And so they're at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in Shasta Lake City. And their phone number is 226-9226. You can give them a call.
Our guest just hung up. He's like, this is not going to go well.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, I'm almost done.
Okay, there. Sorry. Keep going.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, anything, tractors, turf, anything like that, give them a call. They can fix you up. Mower season is right around the corner. So if you've got that mower sitting out in the barn, needs to be worked on, get it in, get it tuned up. Because once that sun comes out, that grass is going to grow about a foot a day. That's what happens. Yeah. So give them a call or get them on the web at papemachinery.com.
Ta-da.
There you go.
You can find more information, actually about our sponsors and about the program and archives dating back to 2010 at wethepeopleradio.us. We've got a page up for today's show, and we're airing this one live on January 12th, 2020. You know, it's funny. I haven't had any trouble writing 2020 on stuff. Apparently, I was completely over 2019. It just...
Yeah.
Good rear view.
No, 2020 is easy.
Good rear view mirror material. Yeah, you can't go wrong.
Yeah, this is 2020.
Unlike CNN. Is that where you were going?
No.
Oh.
No, that's not where I was going.
All right.
Been there, done that.
Forget it then.
Yeah.
So we've been threatening to talk about environmental policy again. We've been doing a lot of stuff on China. And we've got a program on Islam next week and how that's connecting to – the political side of Islam and how that's connecting to all the things that we're seeing in the Middle East right now. So that'll be next week. So it'll be kind of fun with the guests, our guest Peter Friedman, who has been on before. And I do have that page posted already at wethepeopleradio.us, which doesn't always happen. So I thought I'd give you that sneak preview. Today, our guest is Jim Beers, and we have not had him on for a really long time. I do not know why that happened. But I do get his emails on a regular basis, and I listed that on the website. His email is on there, Jim Beers, B-E-E-R-S, easy, the number 7, and he's at Comcast, C-O-M-C-A-S-T.net. And by sending him an email, you can get on his, I don't know, it's not really a subscription, but when he fires off an email about all this different environmental policy and lots of things about the Endangered Species Act, his stuff is really informative, and he is extremely qualified to discuss all those topics, so we'll be shutting up here post-haste. He's a retired U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service wildlife biologist, special agent, refuge manager, wetlands biologist, and a congressional fellow. He was stationed in North Dakota, Minnesota, Nebraska, New York City, and Washington, D.C. He has a bachelor's degree in wildlife resources from Utah State and a master's in public administration from the University of Northern Colorado. He served as a Navy line officer in the Western Pacific and also in Alaska and the Aleutians. He's worked for the Utah Fish and Game, Minneapolis Police Department as a security supervisor in Washington, D.C., testified 3 times before Congress, twice regarding the theft by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service of $45 to $60 million. I mean, what's a million among, friends?
Really.
From state fish and wildlife funds, and once in opposition to expanding federal invasive species authority. He lives in Minnesota right now, so I'm sure he's probably not having his mower blades sharpened yet.
No, he's having his snowblower blades sharpened.
His snowblower tuned up. So anyway, he had sent me this really terrific email, and before we start talking, I just wanted to let people know I posted a couple of his articles. One is Lawyers, Biologists, and Such, and it was a really good history of all this, kind of how we got into this whole mess, a really long list of all the things we enacted in specifically 1976. That was a really bad year.
Big year for environmentalists.
Oh, my God, yeah. What a mess. And then the second article is fires, birds, and government. And not, I don't know how many people left have not paid attention to this, but, you know, there's all this discussion that, you know, climate change is causing all these fires in Australia and stuff. And, you know, newsflash, it's arson. They've arrested a whole bunch of people for arson over there. But there's a terrific article listed there on fires, birds, and government in case we don't actually get to that topic. All right, Jim, now it's all you.
Oh, thanks for having me on. I enjoyed listening to you.
Yeah, it's kind of scary.
Yeah, if she tries to interrupt, just keep talking. That's the only way you're going to get away.
Yeah, just roll on. We don't have a break for like 4 minutes or something, so, you know, you got plenty of time. So where would you like to begin?
Well, it seems like you've taken a great deal of interest in what I wrote about lawyers and biologists and such. And that has to do with the way the trouble that Nixon was having, and then with Ford replacing him as vice president in Watergate, and there was sort of a big explosion of environmental laws and all kinds of regulations being written under them, new things from wild horses and burros to tuna and whales and everything else, and how that coincided with the federal government passing Equal Employment Opportunity Act and legislation and regulations giving preferences to women and designated minorities. And there's nothing racial or sexy about any of that, other than it had all kinds of rippling consequences throughout the federal government that people are complaining about today and have pretty well been covered up and avoided and denied by people in government. Both politicians and bureaucrats, plus the people they work with outside, like the non-government organizations like the Audubon Society and the Defenders of Wildlife and those kind of folks. And I tried to piggyback on an article that was in the Wall Street Journal about lawyers. And this lawyer had written a letter to his university at UCLA about why he should get but why he thought he would not get a bonus this year. And he did a really nice job of talking about the way preferences and diversity have sort of, I guess you could say, changed the law schools and the laws and the behavior of lawyers. And in looking at that as an old wildlife guy, I thought, well, that's exactly the kind of stuff that took place in the Fish and Wildlife Service and the Forest Service, the Bureau of Land Management, and the General Accounting Office and other agencies I was familiar with at the same time. And we look at those things today and we say, oh, where did this happen? Oh, that's because so-and-so was a crooked politician or those bureaucrats over there are a bunch of bums or, you know. But it really wasn't that. It was a lot of grand intentions and struggles by politicians to get elected and reelected. And then promising people more and more, kind of like we see today with, the government will pay for my health care, the government will pay off my kids' student debt, the government will do this, the government will do that.
The benevolent government will come forward
exactly.
And make
your
life
happy.
Well,
there was a big explosion of that in the mid-70s. And the early 70s is when EEO was passed. And the two things really collided and then developed together through the 80s and 90s into the 2010 and 2010s into what we see today, and we want to know what we can do about it. And I think it's a pretty complex matter. When you look at Trump saying, "Oh, I'm going to drain the swamp," and people say, "Oh, that the swamp creatures, we're going to get rid of it." Da, da, da. There's quite a bit to it, and the kind of resistance that's in there, that we say, "Oh, that's these bureaucrats, they're the swamp resisting, and the politicians." There's a reason for it and what they're like and why they're doing it. And I think the article was my attempt to try to explain kind of what we're up against when we're concerned about these matters.
Well, it's kind of interesting because those things you wouldn't necessarily put together. And I don't think people realize, as I read your article, the most important thing that I thought people needed to know is how long ago this started, and really how when you look at the development, and you look at the breadth of it at that time, it really makes you realize this isn't going to be, like you said, one guy's change.
Right.
This isn't going to be, you know, one law that we change or one administrative ruling.
Well, it's kind of hard to believe we didn't see this coming, though. I mean,
I think some people did, but
a snowball.
The rest of us were, I don't know, busy doing stuff or whatever, not paying attention. So let's get into a little bit of the nuts and bolts of that, of how I don't think people realize how the Nixon mess and Gerald Ford coming in. I thought you developed that really well. So let's hit that when we come back. We've got to take a really quick break. Our guest is Jim Beers. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. What shall we do about them when they move into your neighborhood? They take over but good. They want you all body and soul. Body. Then they go, what shall we do about them?
Uptown got its hustlers, the Bowery got its bumps, 42nd Street got Big Jim, a walker, he a bull shooting son of a gun. Yeah, he's big and dumb as a man can come, but he's stronger than a country horse. And when the bad folks all get together at night, you know they all call Big Jim Boss just because. And they say you don't tug on Superman's cape, you don't spit into the wind, you don't pull a mask off an old Lone Ranger, and you don't mess around with Jim. I don't do that.
Good call, Ashley. We don't have enough guests named Jim. I love that song. From here on out, we'll be playing snarky environmental songs, but there you go. Ode to Jim.
Yeah.
So start us off with Nixon and help people understand how we walked ourselves into this ridiculous trap.
Yeah, if you remember, during the Vietnam War, there was all the riots. Free love, drugs. It was a very turbulent period. President Johnson decided that he was not going to run for election. And he wound up with Nixon running against Hubert Humphrey. And the big thing was, who's going to get us out of Vietnam? And people chose Nixon, I think, mainly for that reason. But in campaigning, Nixon, in trying to get more Democrats to vote for him, made a big point of he'd like to do a lot more for the environment and environmental things. He stressed this a lot when he was campaigning. And so he got elected, and he did. He got passed the National Environmental Policy Act, NEPA, which is the whole EIS thing that you see used all the time for stopping a pipeline here, stopping a road there. The EIS drags on for years and years and into court and through hearings and blah, 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 blah.
And an environmental impact statement will be about how big? What's the volume of something like that?
Oh, so I've seen some that were no more than about 10 pages long, and I've seen other ones that look like a book by Leo Tolstoy, and it was still going on. I mean,
wow.
Really. So that's the truth. You know, it depends on who's...
I think people would be
shocked.
Which one
of the NGOs are pushing it, and, you know, I mean, there's...
Yep.
You think it's a bunch of scientists, you know, weighing things and making scientific judgments, but it's political entirely. But it wasn't envisioned that way. When it was passed, it was, oh, that's good, you know, we're going to finally have a forum to discuss what's best for the environment as we live our lives. And the other thing was the Clean Air Act, which, another one, who's against clean air? I mean, if you say that was not a good bit of legislation, people think you should be driven out of the country. But the Clean Air Act is the thing that's used a lot today to shut down fossil fuel power generating plants,
yep.
Argue for mandatory electric cars, putting the wind turbines up because we got to keep the air clean, and the government has this movable standard for miles per gallon and movable standards for so much sulfur, whatever, in the air. And so they can keep cranking on that, depending on who's in office and who's paying enough money to the politicians to have the bureaucrats crank it up even more all the time. So that those two things started off as nice things, but whatever. And there was one other thing done, too, while Nixon was in his first term. He and a bunch of bureaucrats in Fish and Wildlife Service got a new migratory bird treaty with Japan. And, you know, you say, well, what's the big deal about that? There was a migratory bird treaty back in 1917 that put 200 and some species, all the ducks and geese and the songbirds, all under federal protection. And, well, so they signed a treaty with Japan to put a few more birds under there. Cormorants that had been specifically kept off, pelicans that had been, for good reason, not put under federal control because they eat a lot of fish, cause a lot of problems, and when they're under state control, they can be more regulated. They're under federal control, there's no regulation of anything. They're just closed to any management, if you will. So anyway, that all looked like a good deal. And then Nixon came up for re-election in 68, running against McGovern. In 1970, running against McGovern. And while he was running for re-election, Congress and the president signed the EEO Act, which said that women and designated minorities, in other words, not Indians from India or Kazakhstan people or Chinese or Australians, but black people in the United States, literally, that's the definition in there, were to be hired, transferred, and promoted in the federal government workforce at a highly accelerated rate, and that's to be done pretty immediately. Well, that was the way the act was passed. And again, everybody said, well, yeah, there aren't very many women foresters, and there aren't very many black wildlife biologists. It'll be good to have more of them in there, blah, blah, blah. So that was the same thing about the foresters in the U.S. Forest Service, the range managers in the Bureau of Land Management. Those are all agencies in interior agriculture that I worked very closely with when I was in Fish and Wildlife for 30-some years. And anyway, that was getting started, and all of a sudden, bingo. Spiro Agnew was found to have taken some bribes while he was in Maryland, and he had to resign. Congressman Ford was made vice president, and within a year of that happening, Nixon had to resign because he was going to be impeached over Watergate. So we had the things that happened when Nixon was president that were passed, and now we had President Ford, who was coming up against an election for president that he wanted very much to be the president, to be elected in that. The Republicans wanted him to be that. The Democrats wanted to take back control. But they all noticed that for the last 4 or 5 years, since Nixon first got in and they passed those environmental laws, that, wow, a lot of people voted for that. A lot of people love that. They love the bureaucrats that were writing the regulations and going to save all these things. And they also loved the politicians that passed those laws, because that's what we all want. We want more laws for the environment. And everything was looked on as good. Saving this and saving that, protecting this and protecting that was always good. Again, like the Clean Air Act and the stuff, the NEPA that was passed earlier. So there was sort of a giant stampede in Washington in 1975 when the election was coming up, 76 when Jimmy Carter got elected and into that year by the politicians who were running for president and all of the people in their party in the House of Representatives and the Senate, that they wanted more laws and more regulations like that to get reelected and elected. And I mean, it was like I don't know how to describe it. It was like a stampede. It really was. I was there during that, and it was incredible. I listed 30-some acts and treaties and other things that were done during that, and amendments on major legislation that were passed during 1976. Outer Continental Shelf, Plant Pests, Taylor Grazing Act was amended for Bureau of Land Management, Water Bank was amended, all with more and more environmental activism. Forest Service Organic Administration Act was changed a great deal. The First Seal Act was modified, always to protect the animals more, which you think, oh, that's good. But it was not good. It was slowly removing any active management of these different animals and lands in such a way that people weren't going to use them anymore, we're going to get people out of there, we're going to leave them alone. And that's kind of what happened.
We started the policy of no touch.
Exactly. Now, simultaneously with that, stepping back a little bit, in 1970, when this was kind of getting warmed up and the EEO Act was passed, and the federal government, I saw this happen in my agency big time, and I know it happened in Forest Service, Bureau of Land Management, General Accounting Office, and other ones. There was all kinds of requirements to be hired in certain agencies, to get in the Fish and Wildlife Service as a biologist, which most of the jobs were, or a refuge manager. You had to have 40 hours of wildlife management, and the range management the same for Bureau of Land Management. You had to have 46 hours of forestry classes, and you got preference if you had a master's in forestry in the Forest Service, or a master's in range management if you're applying for a job with Fish and Wildlife. It had to do with range management in the western states. So, I mean, there was all these requirements in there. And there was also requirements in each agency that in order to get a GS-13, you had to have worked in two regions. In order to get a GS-14, you had to have had Washington office experience. And all of these were kind of just the way it evolved that, you know, you got preferences based on those kind of factors. Well, when they started, they put the regulations out, and it said the federal government's got to increase the hiring, promotion, and transfer of women and minorities. Within a year, all of the senior people in those agencies were saying, hey, we can't do this. We can't find any women that have got 40 hours of range management or any black employees or black applicants to promote or transfer that have got 40 hours of forestry or have worked in a regional office or worked in Washington as well. We can't, you know, all of this stuff is held up. And you think, well, isn't that wonderful that they're such good employees? But that wasn't it at all. All of the senior executive service in all of the federal government agencies, that's the top people, the real top ones, the regional directors.
They're the ones we can never get rid of.
Exactly. Anyway, they all, and I handle these for a couple of years right here, which is why I know this interesting little tidbit. Those guys all had things for their bonus that was called a work plan. And all of them had two or three, sometimes four, items in their work plan. And they would read like, assures the secretary's policies are implemented in all administrative matters regarding in Region 7 or in the bird division of Fish and Wildlife Service or whatever. And that there was no measure on it. There'd be another one in there that said that assures that the government is notified of any service things, da-da-da-da-da. But they were all value items. In other words, if you work for me and I like what you were doing
and I
want to promote you, I could give you that's a level 5 and you're going to get a maximum bonus because, by golly, Aaron, you've done a great job this year keeping us informed.
And we can't measure it, but that's okay.
Exactly.
All right, we've got to take a really quick break. I'm sorry.
Okay,
we'll
sure.
come right back. So, who would have thought the Civil Rights Act of 1964 could be a problem, but I would submit that the equal employment opportunity thing has been taken to extremes, and I think we're seeing that right now in large part. You're listening to We the People. Our guest is Jim Beers. We'll be right back. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Now don't talk to me about the polar bear. Don't talk to me about the ozone layer. Ain't so much of anything these days, even the air. They're running out of rhinos, what do I care? Let's hear it for the dolphins, let's hear it for the trees. Ain't running out of nothing in my deep freeze. It's casual entertainment, we aim to be. Am I partying for life? Do what you please.
If we had some global warming,
if we had some global warming,
it wouldn't be 20 below,
it wouldn't be 20 below.
If we had some global warming,
if we had some global warming,
I wouldn't be shoveling snow,
I wouldn't be shoveling that blasted snow.
If we had some global warming,
if we had some global warming.
Yeah, if only we had some. as reported on TV, eh?
Yeah, right.
So is this about the same time that, because I know, like, we've had forest supervisors out here with an English degree. Well, I have an English degree, but I shouldn't supervise a forest.
Exactly.
Is that when we changed all the standards for
I was talking about these top people in the government hiring and promoting and transferring, I was making the point that that was the first thing they put in their performance plan that ever had a number measurement on it. And what they all got was one that looked like this. It says, assures that 15% of all hires, promotions, and transfers are women and minorities. Now, that's two ways the guy looks at that. Number one, well, that's not a really high amount if I can do it. And number two, if I do that and keep good records of it, I kind of get to be bulletproof against somebody like you that wants to get rid of me or gives you a reason to give me a really big bonus because you can't give me a small one. I'll give you an example. For about 3 or 4 years in Fish and Wildlife Service, all of the top managers had people that just kept track of how many women and minorities they hired, promoted, and transferred. And they would actually go into their performance review for their bonus saying things like, well, my goal was 15% here in the hiring division are part of this thing, and I've done 62.74% of my hiring has been women and minorities. And it's the 15% here for transferring. I've transferred 47.3. All of these
amazing,
big numbers
amazing
with decimals.
Amazing
performance.
Because I had exceeded my goal. Yeah. How can you fire me? And why should you not give me a great big bonus?
Right.
So they really pushed this. So what they had to do in order to get to it was they had to say, why do you need really 40 hours of wildlife? 45 hours of forestry classes. What difference does a master's degree in that? So they whittled
the
all that down to from just a science, 4 hours of science or something. Well, it's true. That's exactly
through sixth grade.
Yeah, and then they got rid of all of the requirements for why you had to work in a regional office. And a two regional offices was even better when you went to get the next promotion. And you should have Washington experience to get there. They got rid of all that. So what does that mean? That means that you've got people that are going to get hired, and they're going to be women and minorities, plus you're going to have white people that are politically connected and everything,
too. As long as they're breathing, they're qualified.
Well, yeah, plus, but think of this now, and this is just human nature. These people are getting all these top jobs and everything, and people are thinking, and they see them at meetings looking at them saying, yeah, the only reason you're here is because you're a woman or because you're black. And they wanted to dismiss that, you know, that whole feeling and what they knew was the atmosphere. And what would any of us do? And you'd say, well, the reason I'm here is because people like you weren't taking good care of cormorants and pelicans. And you know, you were building roads everywhere and cutting all the trees down and grazing the public lands and even private lands to where there was no grass left and there was erosions and desertification and blah, blah, blah. And then the wild horses were being killed for dog food, blah, blah, blah. And I'm here because people like me are going to be needed to change that with these new laws. So you got two kinds of these people came into the agencies and really took control. You had the ones that didn't know or care about what they were doing. It was like they had a good job in the insurance company. And, you know, what do you got to do to get ahead and make more money? I got to do it. Okay, I'll do that. Whatever. And then you had the other ones, which really the majority, which were people that were animal rights and environmental radicals, extremists, use whatever words you want, that were pushed into those jobs with a growing a closeness between the bureaucrats and the federal government and the defenders of wildlife, the National Wildlife Federation, the Audubon Society, all of them, the Ducks Unlimited, the Trout Unlimited, all of them. they started hiring more political people in those groups to get pressure and ways to get the people who were the new people in the 1980s and 90s in those agencies to hire not just women and minorities, because with no standards left, we could hire anybody, but to pick up people that were against the use of animals or cutting trees or violently opposed to ranchers making any money from grazing cattle and raising meat and the whole nine yards. We want to get rid of trapping. We want to get rid of for the fur market. We want to get rid of the use of wood. We want everybody to go back to living in caves while we, you know, put wind turbines everywhere.
Well, and
that's a good example of
that's
you know,
when
the
we
way
started
they ignored
too,
that.
Well, and at that time, Jim, we started because I was in school. I was a kid in school in the 60s and 70s, and there was a lot of propaganda being pushed at that time on kids about the environment and the whales and the, you know, stuff. And at that time as well, we had more and more people moving into cities.
Mm-hmm.
And so people had less connection with the land.
Yeah, it was such a new idea, and gosh, it sounded great. How could you be against something?
Don't
like
you remember that commercial with the Indian who was crying because there was garbage on the side of the road?
That angered me.
You know, and they showed you that all the time. And we used to drive across the country, you know, in the van and the family truckster and all the kids. And, you know, you'd go through these places and you'd think, oh, look at that piece of garbage on the side of the road. That's terrible. Who threw that out the window?
Yeah.
And they were really pounding us at that time.
Good. And what you wound up with was national forests and national parks that are overgrown with trees now, fire fuel.
Yeah, that are now bursting into flames.
Yeah, and you've got all these problems with wolves and grizzly bears. The federal government has taken control of them and is forcing in all over the place.
Wild horses breeding with each other.
Wild horses that aren't really wild horses. They're actually just feral horses, but okay.
Exactly. But that's all. It's what you call the faux science stuff.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like the faux news or fake news that the president talks about and all of that. Most of it came out of that whole era and all of this federal legislation that essentially took so many things that were once the domain of the state governments and local governments
and
pulled it up to the federal level. And that's why you see so much decline in rural America. It's less and less local taxes collected for local government to do things, and less states' authority to kind of protect the people in Montana from being run like the people in Delaware are being run, and they want to be run because it's all one big federal government. It's just a whole range of things flowed out of that, and now, like you say, and like I see when I travel around giving talks, all the supervisors, the forest supervisors are mostly females. And a lot of the directors and that in Fish and Wildlife Service, not just are black guys, but are people that you say, where in the world did they come from? How do they hire somebody like this that kind of hates the things that we stand for? I often use the example when I try to explain this, when I give a talk, I say, imagine a Defense Department that was made up largely of Quakers. Nothing against Quakers. But I mean, the whole reason for the Defense Department is against their principles and their values and their beliefs, and they're not going to be an advocate for what a Defense Department has to be.
We literally had a forest supervisor here. She's a woman. And she was like two supervisors ago, I guess. And she actually said in a public meeting that her goal was to spend her entire budget on keep out signs because people didn't belong in her forest.
Yeah.
And she thought her forest should be quiet.
Yeah.
That's horrible.
You see that range?
Wow.
You see it in Fish and Wildlife big time? And I was getting driven to the airport from a meeting a couple of years ago out west. I won't tell you what state because I don't want to get the guy in trouble. But it was a state guy driving me there. He told me that the regional director of the Fish and Wildlife Service had told a waterfowl biologist whose main job was to provide water and food for migrating waterfowl, both when they're going north and when they're going south. And he was paid entirely out of waterfowl management funds from Congress. He was told that he was not to do anything to do with waterfowl, but only the jobs for a native ecosystem restoration that she told him to do. And she was so obsessed with this. She actually had one of the law enforcement people in Fish and Wildlife Service come in a couple of months later and grab this guy's computers and take them for analysis to see if he had done any work on waterfowl, which he had, and got him in trouble. But, that was his job, and that's what Congress gave them the money to do. But they, you know, when they got away with what I got in trouble for, the stealing the 45 to 60 million, and nobody got blamed for it, that sent a strong signal to a lot of these people, hey, we're working on God's side here. You know, nobody's going to discipline us for anything, so they can do what they want.
Yeah.
That's developed along with this, too.
Well, we see a lot of, I'll hit it after the break, but we see a lot of smoke and mirror appear in our agencies, just kind of scaring the farmers and ranchers and holding things over their heads. So maybe, yep, maybe you can address that when we come back.
Sure.
You can find out more about our guest and archives of the program, and we hope you'll send this to other folks just to torment them. You can find that at wethepeopleradio.us.
Never meaning what they say now, never saying what they mean. While they while away the hours in their ivory towers, till they're covered up with flowers in the back of a black limousine. Oh, la da 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 da
da da da Others will follow in line. As we board the greenhouse train, we'll say goodbye to acid rain. As we fight global warming, we'll stand united as one. All around the world, a new day has begun.
Oh, I'm sorry to do that to you, Jim. I just couldn't resist.
That's making me cry a little bit.
Tell you what, Debbie Bacigalupi and I had so much fun. She did some shows with me last April, and we sat down. She was at the house, and we sat down for hours one night and just scoured the internet for all these nutty nature crazy songs. Unbelievable. Okay, I forget what we were going to do when we came back.
You're talking about the way things have changed in law enforcement.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, sorry about that. I got distracted by the song. I'm having, like, in our area here, we have all these problems up in the Klamath Basin. And a lot of that is just driven by, well, terrible science. It's not really actually science. And, like, tribal politics, environmental politics, all that stuff. But currently, you know, there's like a settlement type of thing going on with a lawsuit. And so they're threatening, as the biological opinion gets rewritten, which decides how much water the farmers will get. So while that's in play, they're basically telling you if they don't sign on to this agreement with the Yurok tribe, like, oh, that biological opinion's not going to work out for you. And you're going to get hammered and not get any water. And I thought, really?
Blackmail.
This is what our federal agencies are doing these days.
Oh, you bet. That you see that a lot with wolves, you know, in a lot of states.
That's true. We already played that game, too.
Yeah, they really put the arm on these people and scare them. You see that, you know, getting back to what I originally said about having noticed that article about law schools and the way law has changed, that is greatly aided the evolution of what you're talking about here. The way it's changed, the way that the government relates to you and works with you, whether it's in hearings or in the law enforcement practices. I started, it would have been close to 60 years ago now, in law enforcement work, in biology work, but I've always been good at and enjoyed law enforcement work. And back 60 years ago, things that they would call entrapment, and you couldn't do then, are done now routinely. In other words, I entice you to do something that maybe you aren't doing. I just know that you're guilty, so I set up a little deal and I offer you a bribe. And you know, you may have never taken a bribe in your life, but you say, well, you know, I got a daughter. I got to get to college and get her married. And, my wife's job's now, and my wife and I are getting. So you take it. Bingo, they got you. Like Flynn in Washington. They've got something on you, and then they just sweat you about this, that, and the other thing, and make you plead guilty to avoid other things. That kind of stuff did not go on. More, when I started in law enforcement, people were pretty well guilty that got hammered for being guilty, and they weren't entrapped. And the other thing that that came up along this time in law enforcement is the measurement of seizures. They started passing laws because of drug stuff that says if I stop you and arrest you for transporting drugs, I get to keep the truck or the car it's in or the boat it's on or the house that it's in.
Well, that's true, too.
Oh, that's huge in, out here in the West. They do a ton of that.
Well, think about the way that changes the way I work as a law enforcement guy. I start waiting for you to go into the boat. I start waiting for you to get back to that real big ritzy house of yours that I know you got stuff in the basement from. And so in order for me to get the house, because the end of the month or the end of the year, my seizure rate is exactly $1,474,062, and you two, you've only got $80,000, you only got $30,000. Ha ha! I'm doing a lot better job, and the bosses think that too, because they get to keep some of that money.
Yeah.
The rest of it goes into a
like
drawer in the Justice Department.
Yeah, and you get a bigger budget next year because obviously the it's just running rampant.
Exactly. So that you've got new incentives at work here.
Wow.
And it no longer has anything to do with saving the pelicans or NEPA or the wild horses or whatever. But you've got all these other legal things that the regulations express and law enforcement and the courts are starting to enforce too. So there's been a lot of distortions in the federal government's activities back and forth. I use the one example of a general accounting office. Back up until the 1990s, the general accounting office was 90% or more certified public accountants, CPAs.
That would make sense.
They were accountants, and they did audits. And they were good. And that, but it started to change because of EEO because, and it's again, it's a human thing, there weren't very many women that went into accounting, nor were there many black guys or women that went into accounting. And those that did were in such demand by the big corporations and that wanted to showcase them. Well, we've got four accountants here. Half of them are women. We, blah, 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 like that. And because the government couldn't keep them, they had to hire, like you were saying earlier in this program, people with a history degree or a sociology degree or a two-year associate degree from a junior college and whatever, because they could not find women and black people. And they started putting them on audit teams, and, they had no idea what was going on.
They hadn't worked in the field, and now they're auditing other people.
No, they hadn't worked in the field. Sure. They didn't know accounting. I mean, there's a lot to that.
Yeah.
That's a pretty specialized thing. So they started making, the General Accounting Office in the 1990s started making accountability reports. In other words, what used to be an audit, when somebody complained about what's going on in Fish and Wildlife Service with the excise taxes that they're not giving to the state, they sent in auditors, and they went through books, and they did all kinds of stuff looking for money and where it went and the trails for it and everything. But these other people, they couldn't even begin to participate in that. So it got worse and worse, and early in about 2004, after I had worked with GAO on the business about stealing the millions of dollars, all of a sudden I was told by a former colleague that the General Accounting Office, GAO, does not stand any longer. This is not a joke for General Accounting Office. It's now the General Accountability Office, and they don't do audits, they do accountability reports.
No math implied.
Exactly. And again, I'm not knocking anybody or any government program
we'll
so much
for
as
you.
You don't do audits anymore.
It's just stupid.
Yeah. And it's very complicated when you look at an agent's fish and wildlife especially. You look and say, you got fishery money here, you can't use that for law enforcement. Oh, this is research money for migratory birds, you can't use it for endangered species. Oh, no, that's refuge money, you can't use it in the regional office for this. I mean, there's all kind, and that's because that's why Congress gives them the money. See, so you can have somebody like this female regional director I was telling you about tell some poor schlub of a waterfowl biologist, "You better not do any waterfowl work, or you're going to face my wrath, and I'm going to send our law enforcement people into seizure computers and go through them." you can act like that. I mean, that's straight out of something you might see in Soviet Russia or something. But that's the kind of authority it generated, and the lack of accountability through auditing that used to go on has disappeared. And as a result, the attorney generals at the various departments, like Horowitz and Justice, have gotten more and more political. I mean, we had a political guy in Interior there that was a former Secret Service guy. I think he did retire, but all he hired was Secret Service people with him and not auditors. And his job was to follow money in the department. And all he did is please the people on the Hill and please the people in charge, period. I mean, it was as crooked as a pan of guts in there. But nobody could say anything or do anything. You were sort of powerless to, unless there was publicity for it and somebody wanted to put their head on the block, you didn't say anything about it. So a lot of things got distorted, not just because of EEO, but because of the implementation of it, because of the need of the bureaucrats to get bonuses. And then all of these airy-fairy fantasies that were built into these programs in my area, the natural resources area, that stopped them from putting logging roads in public lands anymore or cutting trees, or pulp mills were shut down,
right,
and, you know, getting rid of fossil fuels and all this fire fuel burn, you know, building up everywhere, and we're all saying, oh, my gosh, look at this. It's global warming. And the truth is, you get these catastrophic fires for one reason and one reason only. You got a lot of fuel out there.
Yeah. That's funny. I had a conversation with a guy last week on the phone, and I said, have you ever made a campfire? And the guy goes, well, yeah. I said, okay, so you take two logs and you throw a match at it, right? And he goes, well, no. I said, that's right. You need, like, dry grass, all that stuff. He goes, well, yeah, you've got to kind of build the thing. He, like, tells me all about how to build a little campfire. And yeah. I said, well, that's what you're looking at.
It's not
global warming. It's literally a campfire on a major, major scale.
Exactly. Without roads through it that you can make fire breaks through. And with all this...
And you can't even get there to fight the fire because they're decommissioning all these roads.
You can't even pull water out. Fish and Wildlife Service has stopped firefighters from taking water out of certain creeks or lakes because there's an endangered trout in there.
There you go, of course. They want to take our dams out, so you can't use the water in the reservoirs behind the dams to fight the fires either. So, of course, the plan is they're going to replace that water.
Yeah.
Oh, really? How are you going to do that? You're going to have fire hydrants in the middle of nowhere?
Yep. That's exactly right. So you've got these distortions, and these people that were educated, since you were talking about yourselves being in school, that were educated in all of this, the native ecosystem, natural ecosystem, man doesn't belong there. We should not use any of the wood or any of these firs or anything. So that distorts the state Fish and Wildlife Agency's funding because hunting and trapping are going down.
Well, they're no longer called Fish and Game. Look at California. Yeah. They went to Fish and Wildlife.
Exactly.
So much kinder.
Yep.
Gentler.
Yep.
And you know, they weren't going to switch over their name until they, just a little side note here, they weren't going to switch over their name until they ran out of all their outfits and patches and, you know, all their little trucks got scratched and stuff because it wasn't going to cost the taxpayers any money. And, you know, it was just amazing. All that stuff just got wrecked right away, and they magically had all new outfits and patches and labels on their truck. And, yeah, Game is no more.
Well, a lot of things are no more in regard to that, too. We no more have young men that are very enthusiastic about shooting things.
That's true.
When we've got an outbreak of rabies or something in wolves or coyotes, or people don't know how to trap anymore when we need to trap some mountain lions or something because they're getting out of control. And everything has to be done by the government in a haphazard way, and they don't want to do it anymore. So that's all this, so we'll pick them up and we'll transplant them stuff. And, I mean, I got from a very good friend in Northern California there that he one evening was working on a fence in some woods on the edge of his property with a gravel road that went by it. And it was because a coyote was coming through there and killing some of his sheep. And he was putting a snare there. You're not supposed to put snares out. But anyway, he's telling me this.
Hold on, late at night.
We're gonna
get cut off by the news here in 5 seconds. We're going to come right back with our guest, Jim Beers. You're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
We'll face the fact, the crack of bugs by the snake. Have no one. choice than to deport you.
Who said I see walking in these woods? Why, it's Little Red Riding Hood. Hey there, Little Red Riding Hood. You sure are looking good.
And welcome back to the second hour of... Oh, is he going to say it?
Oh, listen to me.
Oh, there you go. Now, since we're going to talk about wolves, I couldn't resist. So, second hour of We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Our guest today is Jim Beers. And now we're talking about crazy environmental policy. So, my name's Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff, and our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere. Hey, whoa, don't mess with my microphone.
You sounded like you were outside.
Okay. Our sponsor this hour
is... like swinging his head around. He's like looking all over the room.
Pape Machinery. Pape Machinery is our local John Deere ag and turf dealer. And they can get you pretty much anything you want. If it's green and says John Deere on it, give them a call. They can fix you up. Full parts, sales, and service. They're located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in Shasta Lake City. They also handle Honda. Great line of generators. They got the full... generator line in stock, so you know, next time California,
you still live
decides,
in California.
Yeah, you're gonna need a generator, I guarantee you. Stop by and see them, and you can also get them on the web at papemachinery.com or give them a call at 226-9226. Pape Machinery.
Well, there you have it.
Yeah,
so we have posted some really good information online for today's program. We're airing this live on January 12th, 2020. The Eco Policy Crazy Train with our guest Jim Beers. So without derailing any of this any further, let's go back to the snares on the fence line so we can talk about wolves just a tiny bit.
Yeah, anyway, Northern California, he's putting the snare on late at night. He hears crunch, 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 a truck coming down the gravel road near where he's at doing what he's not supposed to be doing, but he's on his own property. So he's back in the trees there, and he said, the vehicle had no lights on, and it stopped about 100 yards from him. And he watched. Two guys got out, looked around, listened for a minute or two, went to the back, pulled a canvas off of a culvert that they had in the back of the pickup, opened up the back end of the pickup, and out flies a mountain lion, a cougar.
Oh, nice.
And they close it up, get back in, drove right by him, but they still had their lights off until they got way down the road. They turned them on and went off. He told me, he says it's probably a cougar from down in San Francisco or Los Angeles somewhere, and everybody thinks that they don't need to trim down the numbers of those cougars. So they say, well, we'll live trap them and take them up and release them in the wilderness. Well, he says, I got plenty of cougars up here. He said, I got enough cougar problems without them bringing more in. But that's the kind of policies you've got going on right now that make it look good. You say, oh, I've got a cougar problem. The state says, oh, we'll take care of it. We'll live trap them and take them to the wilderness. And they do that, and it either beats its way back there or more of them just move in from around there because you've got too many of them. Like you've got too many wolves in many areas. You've got too many grizzly bears in many areas, both for human safety, livestock safety, big game numbers, and other things like diseases and that. So none of that's being managed. It's all these people that are in the government now telling you they're the experts running all this stuff, writing the regulations and helping the politicians write the laws for it, are all really activists with an activist bent because that's why they were put in there.
Right.
This is the brave new world kind of thing, and it's too bad if you don't like it, but people like you are dying out, so... whatever.
Well, and 9 times out of 10, the people they put in these areas aren't familiar with the local economies. They aren't familiar with the local businesses, and they take none of that into consideration when they're, you know, transplanting bears or lions or you know, stopping you from trapping a ground squirrel. I mean, they don't understand the implications of mismanagement, but they just do it.
But
well, they think
that...
it's not mismanagement. They think it's sort of divine mission.
I was going to say they're omnipotent, so
right.
Pretty much leaving,
yeah, exactly.
Leaving,
you know,
wild animals on your property is.
When they go into Washington and they pass laws like this, they've got a Senate and a House for the last 40 years that depends on mainly on urban voters and suburban voters. And those people, I mean, as far as politically, they've been very harsh on their rural neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
The way they've passed regulations and passed laws and allowed regulations to be written that really disadvantage rural people and their communities greatly. Without caring about it, is, you know, they're voting right now to put wolves back into Colorado, and all the signatures they got to put it on the ballot and everything was all Denver and Aurora, Colorado, and that big urban thing there in Colorado. That's the majority of the votes, kind of like Chicago is for Illinois or San Francisco and Los Angeles are for California. They run the place politically, and they either take delight in it or, again, feel this sort of religious fervor that it's good to not use fur and we'll force everybody not to do that. We'll put the furriers out of business.
Well, one of the death blows they pulled in California was the whole spotted owl debacle. They killed multiple communities. You know, they shut down the logging community in a lot of these areas. As a consequence of that, there was no more timber tax that went directly to the local schools. So schools were impacted. They dropped sports programs. People moved away. I mean, it had a huge impact that they didn't even take into consideration when they did that.
And for the people who really only care about the owls and couldn't care less about the people, by the way, it didn't help them either.
No, it didn't.
That's exactly right. And law enforcement was hurt a lot there because they didn't have the money to put in the sheriff's department.
That's right.
That's right.
No police, no fire, no schools. All that timber tax went away.
Women were calling in 911 about their husband out there. She's got a restraining order against him, and he's kicking in the door saying he's going to kill her. They say, well, we'll get there tomorrow. It's the earliest we can get there.
Yeah.
That's the kind of stuff.
And then they
want
to take people's guns away all at the same time. So just not to put too fine a point on it. But, you know, the other thing, too, with that, so they moved it to payment in lieu of taxes, and now the you know, bodies that pass that in the House and the Senate, you know, the people who have to vote on it, they don't see any urgency for what they call PILT, payment in lieu of taxes.
Right.
And they don't see any urgency for that because they consider it rural welfare. And it's like, by the way, you stole our land that we can't use, and we can't use the resources to offset.
We no longer get tax money from it.
Right. And so they want it all set aside for, quote, public land. But, you know, and that's, I guess, another pet peeve we have around here.
But they get to vote every year or 2 years on the amount of PILT payments they're going to go out. The payment in lieu of taxes. And that's a political decision at the time. There's no problem for any of those politicians if they don't vote any money for it.
Well, and the hard part is every time that comes up, you know, the counties can't budget. They don't.
Of course.
You know, how do they know what they're going to.
But they don't want the local government to get in the way of anything.
Well, that's
true.
Whether
it's them saying there's going to be wolves in here or we're going to have grizzly bears here and you better not shoot any of them or whatever it is they want to do. They don't want, just like they don't want the people armed with guns out there, they don't want the local government to have activist sheriffs and county commissioners that say what the cities are saying right now, like you live in and whatever in states. Oh, we're going to be a sanctuary. We're not going to go along with those laws. You see here, in our county, we're not going to go along with your new gun laws, and we're not going to go along with your wolves thing. And they say, well, you can't do that. But then they turn around. And they say, well, we're not going to go along with the federal government's immigration. We're not going to. Okay.
Yeah,
exactly.
Kind of funny, and that all works out.
Yeah, that's all. That's all okay.
Well, we've seen. I guess we should take a really quick break and come back and discuss it. But we've seen a lot of interplay out here in rural America between the courts and the agencies. And frankly, bottom guy on the totem pole is the guy that owns the property, who raises our food. And the men and the women who do that, it's really a travesty.
That doesn't affect me. My food comes from the grocery store.
That's right. Meat comes from the butcher.
That's right.
But we don't know what he's doing back there. It just comes from that case out front. So here, we'll play a little flyover states in homage to our friends in rural America.
class on a flight from New York to Los Angeles. Kind of making small talk, killing time, flirting with the flight attendants. 30,000 feet above could be Oklahoma. Just a bunch of square cornfields and wheat farms, man, it all looks the same. Miles and miles of back roads and highways connecting little towns with funny names. Who'd want to live down there in the middle of nowhere? They've never drove through Indiana. Met the man who plowed that earth, planted that seed, busted his ass for you and me. You're caught a harvest moon in Kansas. They'd understand why I got made those flyovers.
A man a free house and he'll bust out the windows, put his family on food stamps. Now he's a big spender, no food on the table, and the bills ain't paid, cause he's spending on cigarettes and PGA. They'll turn us all into beggars, cause they're easier to please. They're feeding our people that government cheese.
Isn't that the truth? So, Jim, what have we missed? I know there's just a ton that you can go into with all of this.
I hope I've just given you an idea of how the agencies have changed and what you're dealing with there with these career bureaucrats that you think care about the resource or that, when they're really, I guess, social activists for a whole range of hidden agendas, from guns and get rid of small government, to taking complete control and possession of just about all of rural America eventually, and on a sort of a jihad move to do away with logging and grazing and wildlife management, all of which has to be done differently in different areas for different purposes. The idea that there's one way to stop catastrophic fires is kind of silly. But, I mean, if you deal with the fuel, it's one big thing they all have in common. But that science, the history and the results of various attempts to manage the trees in northern Utah like this, or to graze cattle in eastern Oregon like this, or to have more elk than you've got currently or less, all have different effects. And when you apply them, it's a constant balancing act. These people don't want to balance any of that. They just want the people out of there, and they use as an excuse this native ecosystem restoration. They have the grizzly bears and the wolves and all of that balance the ecosystem, which is just a lie. I mean, that's all it is.
Well, what we see in large part, especially with our water issues, our rivers and whatnot, is they have these river restoration plans. And so first they intend to wreck the place. They're going to, you know, release 20 million cubic yards of sediment, you know, 160, 180 miles to the ocean that's going to magically, I guess, go away, which we all know it won't. So they're going to create really a Superfund site, and then we're going to restore it. We're going to restore it to this pristine condition. And the funny part is the pictures that they show have nothing to do with reality. That's never how that river looked prior to dams being put in. I see the same thing with the animals. They want to restore these animals, but not in the numbers and locations where those animals actually were to begin with.
Well, you know, Australia, like North America, When Europeans first arrived there, look totally different than they do right now. And I don't mean because there are farms right now and a lot of roads and cities, but the native people learned to live with fire to keep more open savannas for more grazing animals so that they can hunt them and that. And they knew that if they left things get too grown up, too brushy and then too treesy, there were fires, they would have to flee and probably get run over by these fires. So they were constantly managing the land around them. And we have this notion, this silly, silly notion, that those people just didn't know what they were doing. They were just, you know, backward native people that couldn't even, you know, write their language down, blah, blah, blah. And they didn't do anything like that. They just lived here, but that's the way it should be.
Or worse yet, it took care of itself through the magic of nature.
Exactly. You left when everything was bad.
Mm-hmm. We showed up and it all got bad. It's like, no.
Exactly. That's what all this, a lot of this is just trying to assuage guilt is what it is. Because they teach you that and tell you that those first Europeans, they were just awful, awful people. They destroyed everything, blah, blah, blah. And we are going to restore that native ecosystem and all of this wonderful kumbaya sort of living with nature. And we're all going to stop using fossil fuels. And we're not going to use any oil out of the ground for anything. And we're going to just have windmills and mirrors all around. And somehow we'll get through the next 1,000 years. Which is crazy.
And if we don't chop the birds up, we'll burn them up. And, you know, it was interesting. This morning before the program, we were out driving. So I took Bill to go see these new houses that they're building on the edge of town. And, okay, I think they're hideous. They look like, I mean, houses all look like boxes. I realize they're mostly square. But these literally look like boxes. They're kind of a flat roof deal with glass panels in their garage doors. And a real sort of odd modern look. Anyway, the model home, what was it, $800,000?
Yeah, but it came with a pool. $800,000.
Oh, hell, I didn't realize it had a pool. Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's square, too. But, who's going to afford that? And I guess if you live in the Bay Area, $800,000 would be, that'd be a sweet deal. However, here...
No.
You can get a nice house for $300,000.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's the wave of the future. This is the, what was it called? It was called a modern house, but.
Contemporary.
Contemporary model house.
Yeah.
And I thought, okay, well, that's completely out of reach for most people. So if that's, and it's supposed to be all, you know, it's got the solar stuff, and I guess it has all those kinds of features. But that's not something that's available to most people. 99%.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right. There's these distortions, and that's just a word to talk about variance from what we know commonsensically has been working and what we want for our kids and grandkids. These distortions are put in there by people that don't share our values or respect for our culture or anything. And they want to destroy most of that because they think they're going to build something better. And all they're making is what they did with the forests and grazing lands, just big fire fuel pits. And what they're making with all of these predators that they're protecting, which is a place you can't raise cattle, have dogs outside where you can't let your kids run loose and that. There's just a lot of distortions and the checks and balances on it, either from the lawyers or the auditors or anything, have all been distorted as well. So it's a big job. It takes more than just appointing a better secretary over a department or making a new agency head.
Well, we're developing a greater and greater disconnect between the people that live in the cities and the people that live in the rural areas. They have no idea how life is in rural America, but because most of the people live in the cities, they get to make all the rules
right
for the people in the rural areas. And consequently, the people in the rural areas end up moving to the city because they can't afford to live on their own land anymore.
Exactly, which is what they know is going to happen. And the same thing
right
is happening internationally with wildlife. When we look at the way the UN is manipulated by moneyed individuals and powerful Western nations to keep people in Africa in sort of a quasi-game farm atmosphere, and we don't allow them to manage their own elephants and rhinoceroses and lions and leopards and all of this for their own benefit. And
which they've done for thousands of years.
Exactly. They've stopped all of that. There's no equilibrium there with anything anymore, and it's getting more and more difficult to keep these animals in there. They're overpopulated as can be in South Africa with elephants, even as we talk right now. And, I mean, elephants are a bad thing to have overpopulating because they eat lots. They trample through crops. They run through villages and trample on kids. And it's a big problem. But
well, it's the same problem they're having.
The world won't let them deal with it.
Right. Well, they have that same problem with the polar bears. You know, they've told everybody that, oh, they're endangered and they're out on a little sliver of ice drowning because there's no more ice pack. And yet they're coming into the towns. There's so many of them and basically threatening, you know, like you say, the kids, the dogs, the cats. I mean, there's too many of them.
Yep.
And that's the case with so much of the wildlife now. They have this hands-off policy until, you know, somebody gets eaten by a wolf, and then, oh, well, that was just one bad wolf.
But they always tell you that that never happens. Nobody gets attacked by a wolf.
Oh, yeah. It's always extremely rare.
Yeah.
That's the words they use all. It's extremely rare that the shark...
Until it's not.
Except for the dad that's getting pulled out of his tent, and the wife and the kid are, like, holding on to him as he's getting pulled away by a wolf.
And even the effects of this here in Minnesota... When they protected the wolves here, we've had wolves. They did not get rid of all the wolves in Minnesota ever. They've always had a pretty good population here. When the federal government took over, the numbers increased tenfold of wolves. Well, as the wolves increased, the moose numbers just went down and down and down.
Exactly.
We used to have a moose hunting season here. No more. It was closed about 10 years ago, and I don't think it will ever again be reopened.
Well, they've decimated
the... hardly any moose.
Yeah, they've decimated the elk herds in Yellowstone. Used to be the largest elk herds in the country, and because of the wolf population, they're a fraction of what they used to be. And now they've
still got universities and newspapers telling you that that's not true. It was climate change that did it,
and
it was the fact that there was too many cattle being grazed over here, and all of this other stuff. We've got unknown diseases, and we need more money for research.
Right.
You got all of these excuses that are these guys and girls. No, are a lie. They don't have to have a biology degree for that.
Mm-hmm.
And yet they still do it because that's what is required of the job.
But it would sure be nice if people in those positions had a biology degree and understood how it really works out there in the wild. You know,
if you
put more wolves out on the ground, it's not going to increase the beaver population. And that's, you know, another lie that they're...
Well, the incentives are not there to do those things. In fact, those are the things that they will punish if you do them anymore.
Yeah.
So it's either get along here or get out of here.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, do it our way or else. And
exactly.
Meanwhile, you see all these populations decline. You look at the destruction that it's causing. So these policies are obviously incorrect, but... There seems to be no fix in sight. We've got to take another really quick break. We're going to come back with our guest, Mr. Jim Beers. And you're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Our guest, Mr. Jim Beers. You know, I'm having Ashley queue up a video because this YouTube video had 40, what did I just say? I just said it and it made me mad and I forgot the number, 41 million views or something.
Like 140 million views.
It just was, you know, it was like 40, here it is, 41 million and some change. I've heard from a lot of people over the years. I don't remember when 2014 is when it came out. People actually believed it. I mean, it was supposed to, they pitched it as reality, but they claimed that this was all real. And I know you know this one, Jim. Do we have it, Ashley?
Almost.
Oh, okay. And it's part of how people become completely upside down in their education of how the ecosystem works, about how animals work out in the wild. I mean, it's crazy. Yeah.
Well, it's their source of
science. Yeah. You know, and just not to put too much information here, but I just want you to know that Bill will be biting on his arm because the sound of this guy's voice just sends him into a rage. Makes it fun to play. All right, hit it, Ashley. That's the part that makes me mad, actually, right there.
One of the most exciting scientific findings of the past half century has been the discovery of widespread trophic cascades. A trophic cascade is an ecological process which starts at the top of the food chain and tumbles all the way down to the bottom. And the classic example is what happened in the Yellowstone National Park in the United States when wolves were reintroduced in 1995. Now, we all know that wolves kill various species of animals, but perhaps we're slightly less aware that they give life to many others.
Oh, just stop it there. It's just too ridiculous.
Before the wolves turned up, they'd been absent.
Do you remember when that came out, Jim?
Yes, I do.
God.
I've written several things about it. I mean, the first thing, you know, they were bragging in that thing about the stream banks coming back.
Oh, all
right.
Along the stream banks. Grass and bunny rabbits.
The big benefit of willows along the stream banks, and no denying it, is it stabilizes the bank somewhat, and it gives them shade in the water, keeps the water cooler, and it's very good for trout. But these people don't care about trout fishing or stabilizing the bank. It's all just propaganda with them. And I said to a couple of Park Service biologists when they brought this up to me, what about the trophic cascade and what we're getting with stream banks? And I said, if in fact stream banks were so important for the last 50 years in Yellowstone National Park and you didn't have enough songbirds in there, all you needed to do was start reducing the elk herd. But I said, you chose not to do that. That's got nothing to do with too many of this or we need wolves. All the wolves are going to do is what they did, is almost make the elk extinct in the park, got rid of most of the moose for sure. And I said, what good is that? I said, if you had any sensible approach to this, you would have just reduced the number of elk to have more songbirds and more willows along the streams, which may or may not be a good thing in the long run for people that come to the park, because they all like to take pictures of the elk, but the elk are gone now. Mm-hmm. Well, same with the moose.
This,
you know,
this 4 minutes and 33 seconds of stupidity, it just, you know, the wolves came in, and because they hadn't been there in whatever 100 years or something, you know, it magically changed the entire ecosystem. And I laughed with a friend of mine. He's like, huh, we haven't had hunting in Yellowstone for a hat back, see what happens.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, oh my gosh, that's a great point.
This is all human management of the environment, like we make environment with criminals and with prisons and laws and roads and traffic and lights.
That's true. We let a lot of wolves out of there, too.
And we do that for human benefit. And that's not to say it's a wonderful thing that we appreciate these animals and their species and their presence, and that we tolerate some of them or for whatever purposes here, there, and everywhere. But to say we don't want this kind of animal here where we're raising cattle and sheep, and we've got dogs out there and kids waiting for school buses, and all of this is not some sort of radical ecosystem hatred. It's just simply value decisions for the kind of world that we want to live in, and we try to maintain as many species and as much diversity as we can. But that doesn't mean that we're going to bring saber-toothed tigers back in here if we can get them, or put tigers loose here. We're just not going to do that.
No,
you know,
and that's,
I mean,
that part, it blows my mind that they can't come to terms with such a simple idea as that you can't have certain species walking up and down the street with people. They don't mix.
Well, that's why we whittled the wolves down a long time ago.
A long time ago.
But you know, the thing is, where they're enacting all these changes, they have public meetings all the time about this.
and I attend a lot of that stuff, and it's very, very hard to sit through and watch the poor people who live there.
Oh, yeah.
Who have been there for years and years.
Oh, I know.
Sometimes multi-generational. They've run ranches and farms. They're not decimating the land. They don't want to decimate land that they've had in their family for 100 years.
And
they
know these people are going to decimate their way of life and their property.
Sure.
Yeah, it makes no sense.
With their free-roaming buffalo and all this stuff.
And they try to tell these agency people, oh, wait, it doesn't actually work like that. I mean, they're really nice. I'm always kind of surprised at how nice they are.
Well, the agency people don't want it to work.
No, they actually don't.
They want them out of there. That's exactly what's the truth there. I get asked a lot when I'm giving a talk, are there any questions? And somebody will invariably say, well, Mr. Beers, we've got to go to some hearings that are coming up on this NEPA review of what they're going to do here, or on the proposal for free roaming buffalo. And have you got any suggestions? I said, yeah. I said, don't go. Well, what do you mean? You know, I said, look, I said, God bless you. And I said, you're 100% right. But going to one of their hearings, you're going up against bureaucrats that have been running hearings for years. Bureaucrats that, when they come back, sit down and have coffee in the office and compare notes, and they say, well, there was some crazy guy that said this, that, and the other thing, but we had him timed out, and we had the law enforcement people remove him. Or, you know, we had our guy that was the university professor. We called on him next, and he refuted everything the guy said. I said, they've got you snookered like you can't believe. I said, it's almost like you're running a little league team asking me how you should play the Yankees tomorrow.
Yeah,
I said, they're good at this, and they know what they want. And I'm not trying to be defeatist when I tell you that, but all you do is give it a patina of, well, we've talked to the local people and taken into consideration their points, blah, blah, blah. When, in fact, the whole thing was a sham from start to finish.
Yeah, it doesn't matter if you show up with numbers and prove them wrong.
Nope,
they're still going to
exactly
go back
right.
And say they had a successful meeting and all their
exactly.
points were well taken, and yeah. we're going
to
proceed
forward. Well, I
would
encourage everyone to go to YouTube and look up Brawndo, Brawndo, and just look up the Brawndo meeting from the movie Idiocracy, and it's 2 minutes. Yeah, it's 2 minutes well spent, and it's literally – every public meeting you'll ever go to.
It's a blueprint.
All boiled down into a little nutshell. It goes mm-hmm. in a circle. Nothing gets done, and there's no yep. logic. And it's,
but that's what they
it's
want.
It's unfortunate.
No,
that's exactly what they want, though. They want the people out of there. I mean, I was up pheasant hunting a couple of years ago in Montana. I go to church on Sunday morning, and there's a sign there. It must have been 10 feet high and probably at least 12 feet wide. Great big letters. And right at the door where you walk into the church, vote no on free roaming buffalo. And I asked one of the guys in church when I came on. I said, what's that all about? Oh, he says, I got a referendum here. He says, the state wants to put a bunch of free roaming buffalo out here.
Oh,
and I said, holy cow. I said, you know, you guys got to stop that. I said, they're going to be standing out in the road at 11 o'clock at night when your wife's coming home from a
yeah,
meeting in town.
Be like hitting
with
a
the
house.
Kids in the back seat. You don't see them, and bang, you're going to hit them. They're going to go through your gardens. They're going to go through your crops. They're going to knock down fences where your cattle are. Yeah, we know it. We know it. We know it. You know. And I thought I gave some good advice. Well, that afternoon, I'm hunting with another guy and two dogs. And we're in this rolling Montana, northern Montana hill country there. It's got a lot of pheasants and sharptails in it. And we're walking. The dogs are up there wandering in front of us back and forth. And all of a sudden, it dawned on me. You know, if they had free-roaming buffalo here, the dogs walk over that little hill right in front of me and say there's four of them there, chewing on some grass or just laying down, and the dog startles them, and they're going to come up and they're going to go after the dog. And where's the dog going to go? The dog's going to go right back to me. And here I am with a double barrel 20 gauge with six shot in it.
Yeah.
And there isn't a tree within a mile.
That'll make them mad.
Where am I going to go? You know. But I mean, think about the government putting things out there like that.
Yeah, yeah.
They tell me this is a hunting area that my hunting money made the purchase, the excise taxes from guns and ammunition that they want to get rid of, so you can't do it anymore.
Yeah, but there's
all out there.
There's a fix for that. You know, I mean, if there is an issue like that, then you need to stay out of that area.
Exactly.
And then we'll be okay with it. You know, it's isolated.
They were here first.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's nuts with some of the stuff they want to do with these endangered species.
But they want
species.
Me out of there. They don't want me to have a gun.
Right.
And all
right.
that other stuff eventually. So, yeah, they're in charge of these agencies right now for a lot of the reasons, not exclusively, but in large measure for what we were talking about, the EEO change in the federal workforce and more laws getting passed and more unregulated regulations being written by these activist radicals that are running the government. And it pleases the politicians because they think they're pleasing the people in the cities that will reelect them.
Right.
Well, and then seeing what we see up here, especially with a lot of the bad water policy, is they'll pass like a good the one biological opinion I'm thinking of actually wasn't good, but pretend it was. Then what happens is the tribes and the environmentalists and all these groups they all sue, and some judge who lives down in San Francisco, William Orrick actually is his name, he'll make some idiotic ruling. And then he'll make another one, and another one, and another one, and another one. So pretty soon, the original agreement is encumbered with all these court rulings. Well, then everyone's stuck. So they spend, you know, instead of 90% of their day growing food or, you know, raising livestock, they're spending all their time, you know, in court,
yep,
and doing fundraisers. There are more fundraisers in rural America than you can shake a stick at.
Yeah.
I don't know if people in other parts of the country, other parts of the world realize, but folks who live in these places that have a lot of public land, they spend the bulk of their time going to and supporting fundraisers to keep their rivers, keep their property open, and to fight back all this crazy bureaucracy. We have to take a really quick break. Sorry about that. We'll be right back with our guest, Jim Beers. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. So as boring as all that stuff is and as stupid as it all is, the only way, I mean, really, the only thing we've got looking forward is to make sure you know what's going on in your local area, support the people who are doing the things we need, you know, growing our food, raising our livestock, and make sure that you're in contact with your elected officials, because not everybody is down for this gig. And the folks that are opposing all of it, they're a minority, and they could use your support.
Yeah. No, and you know, a lot
at the
of people,
state and federal level,
right,
actually.
A lot of people say, well, I'm pulling out of California. It's a lost cause. Well, that's great. I'm glad you can afford to do that, but it leaves darn few people left behind.
You didn't buy that $800,000 magic box.
Well, yeah, but the people that are left are fewer in numbers that are going to fight this stuff, and you just can't give up.
I don't know, Jim. Got any good ideas for people?
Well, I try to understand what I'm saying when I talk about these things, and it depends a lot on each person's circumstances, their education, their financial backing, as to where they can fit into trying to change this. But it means making it important, studying what's wrong, and seeing what's best for restoring your local government to help you get the state back on track. There's been a lot of things changed over the years. I mean, when they changed the way they elected senators, it dramatically changed what we're dealing with here, where up until 1914, the senators were appointed by the state legislature, and after that, they were a popular vote in the state. So you've got senators today who really don't represent your state. They represent those feminists and those CEOs and civil rights people over here and these animal rights people over here and these radicals here and these newly citizen-made, what were formerly illegals. They represent this hodgepodge of people. And that's who they respect. There's nobody really representing you as a state anymore. And it goes for all of us.
Mm-hmm.
They represent a block within the state, and that's who they, and that block, for the most part, does not want you or me around.
No.
So, you know, you've got to learn to deal with that from where you are, and there's no one. People look to me a lot of times like I'm going to tell them, oh, in Section H of Paragraph 3, if you change the verb, you know, all of a sudden this will all disappear.
God, wouldn't that be
That's
nice?
Not the case.
The thread, the magic thread.
Yep.
Well, a lot of it, you know, I think sometimes people don't get involved because they don't feel like they know enough to get into any kind of a discussion, but I don't know. There's one thing that always matters, and it's body count. And so if there's something big going on in your area, you might not be an expert, so don't go to the microphone and speak, perhaps, or have somebody else, you know, give you some smart stuff to say for 3 minutes in your comment period. But showing up and lending your support to those folks that are knowledgeable in that area, that makes a big, big difference. And it gives them the will to continue pressing forward. You know, it's always interesting to me that those meetings, they always, you know, some people leave and they're all angry. But most of the time what I find is that folks in rural America who are predominantly conservative that want to use the land for the benefit of the land and the people and, you know, keep things on an even keel that way.
Yeah, their community, the hospital.
They just want to be able to educate their kids and, you know, do stuff. Those folks are normally, you know, every time I go to one of those things, it's like, well, let's all go to dinner after, you know. It's usually a pretty good social time. So it isn't just an axe grinding session. But tell you what, you have to give those people some support because it's very hard to make it in rural America. And I'll tell you what, we lose the ability. You know, they talk a lot about all of this, you know, Middle East and all this national security. And we've got, you know, Saudis on our bases and we're vetting them to see if they're secretly creepy. And that's all great. But I'll tell you what, we lose the ability to feed the people in this country. That'll be the greatest national security threat next to an EMP that we'll ever face.
Yep. That's true. Well, they want to change that, too. They don't want you to eat meat. They don't want you to start eating these tofu burgers or whatever it is.
Oh, yeah, the meatless burgers. That's the
big thing. Bill's totally into that.
Oh,
he loves kale,
I
too.
I can't wait.
Kale's a big seller.
But, I mean, they want that. You know, they laugh when you say, well, you know, people want to have them grow their meat or grow their food. They say, well, you know, we'll just manufacture it. Ha, ha. You know, there we go. It's kind of like climate change trumps all. And their mind doesn't work that way. And you and I have to be as active as we can be and as much publicity as we can get, like you're saying, in a way that best suits our temperament, our background, the threats around us, and work against what's going on there. So there isn't just one size fits all, but the point you made is very good, though, about showing up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not everybody, you know, wants to spend the time, but you know, I guess I'll use this also as a time to plug your email list that you send out. You send out some really, really interesting stuff for starters. It's very well informed. It's well researched, and it isn't, you know, secret science stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It isn't something that you're going to need to sit down and, you know, go to school on. And
well, that's what I try to do. I really do.
It's very helpful, and it's written for regular people. And, you know, once you read through some of these things, you can get educated in a fairly short period of time.
Well, I hope people read it, and I encourage them to send it to your neighbors, send it to your relatives, send it to your coworkers. You know, send it to everybody you think that might be interested in it. And then if you got questions, ask me. I try to help people as much as I can. You know, I'll give them advice for what, and I don't charge anything. I don't send my list to anybody else or any that. I do this because it's got to be done. And I just try to, I think we should all be like that and try to help each other, help our communities, and see what you've got in common with these other people that are being harmed by this sort of new wave way we're governing ourselves right now and try to change it. You know, you just got to make it important, and you got to vote right, and you've got to, like you say, show up. You got to write letters to the editor. You've got to stand up to people when they start, instead of being intimidated and hanging your head and walk off, when they start talking a lot of this nonsense, tell them they're talking nonsense. And you don't, not in a way that wants to start a fight, but that you want to explain to them why they're wrong.
Yeah.
What you believe is true and what's right.
And sometimes it feels, I think we've gotten, I think people have sort of generally adopted the idea that everyone's picked a team at this point. Mm-hmm. Everyone's in a camp and there's no crossover. But yeah. Really interesting, I spoke with a guy last week who was saying that when are we going to start doing something about global warming because climate change, because it's of all these fires in Australia. And by the end of the conversation, he was really angry that our forest policy is so out of whack and that that's what is causing the fires here and there. Mm-hmm.
Well, and also the information he had was all incorrect.
He was all pissed that they'd lied to him.
The media had lied to him.
He's like, oh my gosh, that's a lie. I go, well, babe, don't take my word for it. Go look it up. But, this is something to consider. And he said, I cannot believe that. That's just terrible. So just about the time you think that, well, this is a fool's errand, but okay, I'll throw it out there. Somebody says, what do you mean? And you have the ability to maybe walk through that door and give them some information.
Yep, that's right.
So, your emails are a great way to do that. So I've attached two of them on the page for today. So people can go to wethepeopleradio.us, and Jim Beer's information is on there for today's show, January 12th, 2020. And then I linked a show that we did May 22nd of 2016. I cannot believe it was that long ago. That was the Lost in the Wilds of Neglect.
I've been busy with a whole lot of things, too, in the meantime.
So. Well, apparently.
Well, we all try to do the best we can. I've been traveling a lot and giving talks. And I also had a bad hack job on my computer, and I have to do this all myself. And it just
That's always
takes
nice,
a lot of time
isn't
and
it?
Effort. But even like your radio program, marvelous, marvelous stuff that.
People can, we'll have the commercial-free archive up later today. If you want to put it on a thumb drive and give it to people, if you want to burn CDs and sell them, we don't care what you do with it.
Right.
Just get the information out.
You bet.
Because that's absolutely the most important thing. Jim, our time has ended. We have a fun global warming song to go out with so we can make a little fun at our...
Hey, thanks for coming on, Jim. It was a great time.
At the expense of our brethren, our uninformed brethren. Thanks, Jim.
Yeah,
we will talk to you again soon.
All right, bye.
Out of the clouds.